We screwed it up with the triangles. I'm very ashamed. This just tells me I should move on to administration because my mathematical skills are degrading. And we're gonna fix it now. I was just missing one core argument in the big picture. And if you have this simple argument, then it's not that hard. And that's what I'm going to explain to you now again. So let me just go to the picture again. Where is it? Here it is. Okay. So listen, you will be surprised. And everything was going great until Stefan screwed it up with some questions where I was totally confused. So we have parallel beam. And we have fan beam geometry. Why is the light not on here? So let's draw the situation again for fan beam. So we have here our detector. Yeah, we call it detector. And our detector is characterized by, this is our coordinate system, by the rotation angle theta. That's the rotation angle theta. And given the rotation angle theta, we index the pixels by s. That means rotate the detector by theta, and then for a given theta, walk on this one line, straight line, to the point s. Okay, that's a 1D coordinate system. And we have here the parallel projection lines. For Ingvar, who is here with us the first time, these are the lines the X-ray particles are propagated along. Okay? Good. So, is there anybody in the audience except Ingvar who is not following up on this? Nobody. Okay, good. Then we have fan beam. Fan beam, we have the following. We have our coordinate system. And we can move the coordinate system to a place that, again, the detector goes through the origin. We call it, again, detector. Okay, and then we have an X-ray focus. We have an X-ray focus, and that means in the X-ray focus, all the X-ray particles are generated at a single point, and then they are propagated through the object, and it's a bundle of projection rays. Yeah, they intersect in the X-ray focus. And if we consider the 2D situation, it's like a fan. That's why it's called fan beam geometry. Okay, so we have an X-ray focus, and then we have here our projection rays. And we measure the X-ray energy here. Quite often in CT systems, the detector is curved, that we have an equiangular sampling. Yeah? If you have a flat detector, that means in the center you have denser samples, and the more you are away from the center, the more the projection rays diverge from each other, and the smaller or the sparser the sampling will be. Okay? Good. So we call this detector I, like Ingvar, okay? And we call this detector here S, like Stefan, who screwed it up. S, like screw it up. That was the situation we stopped last week, okay? And let's talk about the characterization of the fan beam geometry. we said that the angle between the y-axis and the central ray that intersects the detector in a rectangular angle, so orthogonally, this is called beta. Okay? Beta. And if I select a ray here, I call this angle here gamma. So if I give you a beta and a gamma, you know exactly what to do. You rotate your detector such that the central ray intersects the central ray that intersects the detector orthogonally has an angle beta with the y-axis. And then once the beta is selected, I give you a gamma, and the gamma tells you how much you deviate from the central projection ray. Okay? So we call this intensity value here P of S theta or theta S. And this here we call gamma beta. Just for the ordering, I looked it up. So if I want to have this element on the detector, I have to find the rotation of the detector such that I have this angle beta. And then I go for the ray gamma, and I observe, was it gamma beta or beta gamma? Gamma beta. Okay? So whatever I measure on the detector for parallel beam and for fan beam, I can give you the theta and the S, and you can look it up in all the projections. And I can give you the gamma and the beta, and you can look it up for all the projections. So we have two bivariate functions, two functions in two variables that characterize the situation. Okay? So far, so good. Then let me just simplify the figure a little bit. I do now the following. What do I do? So. I just clean it up a little bit that I have just this triangle here. If you would still pay 500 euros, I would draw a new figure, but now you have to deal with what you get, yeah, here. So this is the triangle I look at, okay? And here is the orthogonal relationship between the detector and the central ray. Max, you agree so far? Okay. This is the situation we have seen last week. And then I mixed the two figures without telling you that I'm mixing the two figures, but I was tremendously arrogant and was telling it's so simple that my daughter can solve it, and then I screwed it up and couldn't solve it. You remember? That was the situation last time. And I mean, think about the implication. That means if I ask you a question in the oral exam and you don't know it, you can always say, I mean, you did the same in the lecture, so why should you blame it on me? Does it happen in China as well? With Chinese professors, really?
Yes.
Ooh. Ooh. You should reconsider your hiring strategy in China. So what I do now, and that's what I didn't do last week or last Monday in the explanation. I just say, let's consider this projection ray with the intensity value, the normalized logarithmic intensity value, G gamma beta. Let's consider this one, and let's find the PS theta that is identical to this one. That's what we look for. We want to convert the G gamma betas that we measure to PS thetas, where we know the reconstruction algorithm for. And the PS theta is the measurement for the orthogonal projection. Yeah? Due to the weakness of our physicists, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, we do not have this situation as computer scientists, medical engineers expect, but we have this one. So what we now do is we compensate for this setup that is not fulfilling our requirements. And now what I do is I now take this piece of chalk that is a real chalk today, not my fingernail, and I draw into the right-hand figure the detector of the left-hand figure. Now, that means I draw in here that detector. This is the detector I. And that's what I didn't explain on Monday. And I didn't explain to you after Stefan was asking, what is this? This is the detector that I carry over in this figure. And here I have theta. Okay? And that was the problem, because Stefan was saying, come on, you say here it's a rectangular intersection, but shouldn't it be the central ray? And I totally screwed it up. Okay? And now we have this figure here. And due to the lack of tuition fees, I have only white chalk here. So you have, I know I'm repeating myself, I have this triangle. And now look at the figure. We now have to compute, what do we have to compute? Relationship between theta, beta, and gamma. We have to compute a relationship between theta, beta, and gamma. And now the question is, what is this angle here? What is this angle here? Do I have? This is the wrong one. Sorry. Let me pick out this figure again and draw this more, just with the only triangle. So I have the situation that I have this detector. This is the detector S. I have the central ray, the X-ray focus. The central ray intersects with the angle beta. Then I have the angle gamma. And then I have here the second detector. So this one is dashed. We don't consider this anymore. Here we have G of gamma beta. And here we want to know what is theta. And what is the S here, the index on the detector? So this is P of S theta. Okay? So, and here we have a rectangular angle. And now the question is, what is this angle here? What is this angle? Well, this here is 90 degrees. Right? So this is 90 minus theta. This is 90, so this has to be theta. Okay? The rule that all the angles sum up to 180. Yeah? Or to say it in arrogant manner, this is what you know from the seventh year of your school career. Okay? So if this is theta, then we know if this is theta prime, that beta plus gamma plus theta prime is (180). But now we know that theta prime plus theta is 180. So we can say beta plus gamma plus, should write what I say, gamma. And then this is 180 minus theta is 180. And now we can use Mathematica, for instance, or any other computer algebra system to simplify this term. And what we get is theta is beta plus gamma. Life can be so simple, right? Yeah. it's basic geometry, but you know, you have to know what you do, right? And on Monday I did that on purpose just to show you, you know, that it's important to think about these things in detail. And yeah, I know. You agree on that now, my friend? Yeah, it's better explained than on Monday, right? Okay, your answer should be you didn't explain it on Monday. Okay, good. So once again, the problem was, we have the orthogonal projection scenario, we have the fan beam projection scenario, and then we had a figure where we had the fan beam geometry, but the parallel projection detector. Yeah? Ladies, you have not attended the lecture Monday, so you are not knowing what I'm talking about, how I screwed it up, right?
I know.
But now it appears very simple, right?
I have a question.
Of course. The phi,
the theta,
here, look at this. This here is the coordinate system. So this angle here is 90 degrees minus theta, okay? This one is 90 degrees. So this one plus 90 minus theta has to be 180, okay? I don't answer questions here. Go ahead.
Why do we model the detector S as a straight line and not as an arc?
Because in terms of, first of all, in terms of these geometric considerations, it's way simpler to consider straight lines. And the other thing is, if you look at the bundle and you have here your circle, yeah. And you have here your projection bundle. And here you have your arcs from pixel to pixel. It doesn't matter whether you take the straight line here, you get the same intensity values because here is just air. So it doesn't change the measurement from a theoretical point of view. Yeah? The only thing, and that's also, well, this should also tell you that this is a very intelligent and valid question you were asking. If you have an infinite number of projection rays, it doesn't matter at all, okay? But if you have a finite number of projection rays, you have the problem of sampling, because your detector is usually equidistantly sampled, and your rays, if they are equiangular, then you see a problem. You either miss points or you have to interpolate. And that causes errors. We will talk about this in a few minutes. But for setting up the geometry, it's better to work with straight lines and to explain this with straight lines. And in practice, it would also make no difference if this detector would be curved, because the G gamma beta value from a theoretical point of view would be the same as well. Okay? I cannot draw curved lines. That's the explanation. Okay. Do we all agree on this now? Are we happy now? Yeah, we are more happy. Yeah, we are way more happier. Good. So that was the figure. Please be prepared. I will ask this in the oral exam because I have to practice this. Good. Okay. Now we have a relationship between beta, gamma, and theta. So if you give me a function value g of beta, gamma, gamma, beta, whatever, gamma, beta, and I know the gamma and the beta, I can instantaneously compute the corresponding theta for the parallel geometry. No? I just add the two angles. No? You say I have fan beam. I have fan beam representation. I give you a 2D function in the discrete. These are the gamma values, these are the beta values, and these are the measurements. And then I can take the gamma and beta value, and I can compute the theta value of the detector that realizes or implements parallel projection. And if I compute for all your G gamma beta measurements, the P theta S measurements, then I can feed in the transformed values, the P function, into the parallel reconstruction method, and I can do a reconstruction.
What's
Max?
With the borders of the detector, so when I have a beam that hits the this parallel beam geometry, the borders, it doesn't hit.
You can only convert those points that you have on both detectors, of course.
Okay.
Or let us say we have very strong physicists and they build infinite detectors. Okay, can we agree on that? Okay. So you give me beta and gamma, and I compute theta. Period. So and what is the remaining problem? What's your name?
Dominic. We have to get S.
We have to get S. How do we get S?
Trigonometry.
Yeah, Bavarian Abitur, 10th class or something like that. Yeah, 10th year. Also with a Berlin Abitur, doesn't matter. So tell me the formula. If this here is the distance d, that's how we call it. From here to the center, it's d. Can you compute s? This is s. This is s. Well, this is a rectangular or a triangle with one rectangular angle, 90 degree angle. So we can use straightforward trigonometry. Mm-hmm. So the sine of this is the opposite side of the angle divided by the hypotenuses. Yeah, the side that is linked to the angle we are considering. So we have sine of gamma is S divided by D, and that means S is D times sine gamma. Okay? You agree on that, my friend? Good. So you give me gamma and beta, and I compute S and theta. And so I can compute out of gamma, G gamma beta, I can compute P of S and theta. And then I can do the standard filtered back projection. That's how I can do the reconstruction. That's the three step. We measure G of gamma beta. We compute P of, we compute the corresponding S and theta, and build up the function B, P, and then we feed it in to our filtered back projection. The only problem is here that these are discrete. Yeah? So my indices on the detector, the indices, they are discrete numbers, pixel number 1, pixel number 2, pixel number 3, pixel number 4. By this transformation here, I will get an S like 5.3169. And the question is, how do I get the intensity value at the discrete values? So you have to do interpolation. So interpolation is required. Huh? So we have the problem of interpolation. And that means if I hit a point here, yeah, I want to know what is the point here or what is the point here. How can you deal with that? We have learned about different interpolation schemes. You remember in the chapter on distortion correction, we also had the problem of interpolation. So you can do here a nearest neighbor interpolation saying that this value is just moved to the closest index. So if this is 4.3, we just say the pixel is 4 and the value that we get is exactly this one there. Or we do an interpolation, a linear interpolation over there. And then we have a rule of thumb. That's also something that Marco has explained to you that time in the lecture. We always sample in the space of the result we want. And if we want to use P of S theta for reconstruction, we have to compute for discrete S and theta values the corresponding G, gamma, beta values. That means we have to convert the situation here. So we have to compute for a given S and for a given theta, gamma and beta. Yeah? That means if I have here my parallel detector, and if I have here my fan beam detector, then I sample here for different theta and for different S values. I sample here, for instance, the whole situation on my G gamma beta detector. And I'm here. These are the two measurements for two gamma values, for instance, on the detector. And I have to interpolate by using these two values. For instance, if the value is this one and this one, we do a linear interpolation between the two values. And then we just look what the linear function tells us in between the two points. Huh? And interpolation is a problem in general. Why? Why do you think interpolation is a problem?
Because I assume that I know the values, but I don't know the exact.
Yeah, we don't know the exact interpolation kernel, so we do an approximation, and usually we lose higher frequencies by this process. So interpolation means we are low-pass filtering. That means we lose edges. We lose edges in the signal. Yeah? So we lose contrast resolution. So we should really avoid interpolation. Okay, and one comment, if you are an engineer later on in industry and your boss tells you implement this and interpolation is required, the first shot should always be use nearest neighbor interpolation and show the pictures to your boss. Your boss will look at it and say, it's very noisy. And you say, I know, but that was the first attempt. I need another 6 months to fix it. Yeah, and then you use bilinear interpolation or linear interpolation, and then you are done and you have 6 months spare time. Yeah, that's the strategy. And that's when you can have a creative phase in your life. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Your boss is not fighting with details, so he will not find out. The dangerous part is your colleague. If you have a hyper-motivated colleague, he might screw you up at this point, but these problems can be fixed with beer. What?
Oh. We're just talking about colleagues.
About colleagues? Oh, no longer friends? He's your
colleague.
Oh. Okay, where are you? Where are you? Fraunhofer Institute. Okay. Very nice environment. Who said yes? Okay. Because you can screw up your colleagues? Oh, okay. Okay. Good. Well, you work at Fraunhofer not to make problems, but to solve problems. Good. Any questions? Stefan, are you happier now? You're happy? Don't tell me that you already fixed that at home. You did? Where is the lady who sent me an email? No. I'm sorry that I was so short in my response, but okay. But very nice. I appreciate if students send me emails with their approach how to fix things. That's good. Yeah, you should really deal with these things in your mind and work on these problems. Good. Just for Ingvar, we have considered parallel projection first, and their deconstruction is basically using the Fourier slice theorem. You remember this a little bit? Fourier slice? Okay. Okay. And was it a pleasure to watch the video? No. I know that.
I wouldn't be here otherwise.
If the videos would be clear, you wouldn't be here, right? The situation in the exercises is it more relaxed? Is it now okay? Yeah. And how is the complexity of the homework problems? It's okay. You do the implementations. Really? Okay. Max, look into my eyes. Are you programming the exercises? No? That's not good, Max. If it makes you feel better, I'm also not implementing the exercises. Good. So let's go back to the slides now. We have seen on Monday also an alternative approach to do the reconstruction. And the idea was that we consider the point spread function. Somebody remembering how the point spread function is defined or what the point spread function tells us? Can you explain it in a way that you remember it 10 years from now?
Oh my god. The system, the picture the system puts out when I put in some delta.
Exactly. It just tells us how much a point is smeared through the acquisition pipeline. So if I acquire a point and the point in the image is some blurred structure, the way the point is blurred, that's the point spread function. Yeah? That's characterized by the point spread function. And then we looked at the point spread function of fan beam and parallel beam projection. And first, we have pointed out that the point spread function is shift invariant. That means it doesn't matter where we are in the picture. The point spread function is the same in the reconstructed slice, independent of the projection geometry. It's the same for parallel and fan beam. And secondly, it came out of the blue without any proof. The point spread function is 1 over r, where r is the distance to the point we want to reconstruct. That means you have a 1 over r decay. That means your function is blurred the larger the distance is, the lower the blurring is. So the closer you are to the point, the higher the blurring is. That means the point is smeared, and then it's disappearing. And we have explained this by the convolution of the function we want to reconstruct with the point spread function kernel. That was the function f, and then we said, okay, convolution in the spatial domain is a multiplication in the frequency domain, and it turned out that reconstruction can be done by back projecting, smearing back just the projections that we have observed without doing anything, and then applying a convolution using the kernel that is expressed in the frequency domain to be the absolute value of omega, or the distance of the length, the Euclidean length of the vector omega in the frequency representation, represented by the frequency in x and y direction. Yeah? That's what we have shown last week. And it's also true that on the slides, B and F was mixed up. You remember that? There was this typo, and that should be fixed in the download now. Okay, good. Why isn't that working here? Because HDMI is not switched on. So let's briefly browse through it. So we have this scanner scenario that you should have in mind. We have the donut structure of our computer tomography system. We have here our X-ray tube with a point source. And as a matter of fact, the point source is not a point source, but we have a focal area. And dependent on the manufacturer and the quality of the X-ray tube, you have a smaller point, smaller area, or if you have X-ray tubes that are not that well designed, then you have a larger area. Yeah? And in the design of the X-ray tubes, that's also something I want to point out, the smaller the area is of the focal point, the more energy is placed on this small area. Yeah? And that means the more heat is generated. We know that in an X-ray tube, 99% of the energy that is applied to the X-ray tube is converted into heat. Yeah? So it's a very tough problem to cool the X-ray tube and to keep the temperature on a level that it doesn't die within the first 5 images you capture with this device. Yeah? So that's a very, very tough engineering task to build an X-ray tube that survives and has a small focal area. So if you are later on working as an engineer and you are in charge of ordering a new CT or X-ray system, you should always ask the manufacturer, what's about your focal point? Yeah? How valid is the assumption that you have a point source? Yeah? And here you have your curved detector. Yeah? In CT systems, the detectors are curved. In those C-arm devices that you use for neuroradiology or cardiac applications, the detector is a 2D detector and it's a plane. Yeah? It's not curved. Good. So once again, these are the two scenarios. And just keep in mind, by converting this scenario into this one, we just take this detector in here and do all the basic geometric computations, and then things can be described. The other thing I want to point out is, that's what we have seen last week or on Monday as well. If you have fan beam geometry, you have the same problem like you have with orthogonal projection and perspective projection. Think about your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Orthogonal projection, it doesn't matter what the distance of your girlfriend is. Yeah, she always appears in the same height. And if you send away your boyfriend 500 kilometers, he's still the same height. And if you have perspective projection, he's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Yeah? So the problem is solved after a few kilometers. And the same is here. If you have perspective projection, fan beam geometry, the closer you are to the object, the more it is blown up on the detector. And the farther you are away with your X-ray tube, the smaller the object gets. Okay? And this angle here of the upper X-ray beam and the lower X-ray beam, this angle here is the so-called field of view angle. The field of view angle. And now think about a patient who is a valued McDonald's, Burger King customer. Yeah. If someone like that goes into the scanner, you have to make sure that the body of this valued McDonald's customer is in the field of view. Because otherwise, if the body falls outside the field of view, we have areas here where we do not measure line integrals. And I mean, computer scientists, medical engineers, we can do a lot, but we cannot generate objects without measurements. Huh? So we run into serious problems if you have patients that do not fulfill the requirement that they fall into the field of view of your scanner. And that's also why industry is building more and more also CT scanners with a larger donut structure that you can bring in patients that are covered also by the field of view using these scanners. So that's interesting. And as a matter of fact, I mean, if you look at the nice brochures of industry, you always see nice young people sitting in the scanner being scanned. And the reality, I mean, is very much different. You have all the sick people and these patients have equipment, and you have to scan these people, and that's not as easy as it appears in these marketing brochures. Yeah. Okay, good. So we have perspective distortion using this. Perspective distortion has also a nice impact because parallelity is not preserved. Yeah? Keep this in mind. If you map parallel lines using perspective projections, they are no longer parallel. For instance, if you look at a stand here, at a tube, a small tube here in the vessel, and you have a perspective projection from a certain angle, you might have the effect like you know it from the roads, where the road boundaries are parallel in real life. And if you look, you always have the feeling that the boundaries intersect at the point of infinity. Yeah, so the doctors, they also have to learn to read these X-ray images according to the acquisition geometry that is used. Huh? It's very interesting scenario. And also for you to deal with these things, I mean, if you have a CCD camera, you have here your focal point. You have here your object. Yeah, like your boyfriend. And here you have your CCD. And here you have your projection on the CCD chip. And in X-ray, it's different. If you really hate him, you should look at him with an X-ray system, because then the detector here is on the other side. Yeah? That's the difference. If you have visible light with your iPhone, the latest model I just invested here, and you have here your lens, and in the back there is the CCD chip. So the rays come in and they intersect here in the focal point, and the rays basically feed the CCD chip with information. And in X-ray, it's different. You have your source outside. You have the object you want to look at in between, and your detector is also outside. Yeah? And that means it's always enlarging the object. Good. This is ice cream. I think you saw that. Good. What? flowers. Maybe it would have been flowers. Flowers, yeah. Your fantasy can do whatever you want. Good. Here again, the geometry we have considered with a point spread function. I don't have to follow up on this. Here, f and b should be changed. And this is the important message. B, what's again b? Sebastian? I don't remember your first name.
Benedict.
What was B? Consider this as an interview. B was the back projection without doing anything to the projection. That means we take the projection and smear it over the object we want to reconstruct. So we have the blurred reconstruction. And then we have to apply the Fourier transform. So we get the blurred filtered back projection, the blurred filtered back projection in frequency domain, and we filter it with a ramp function where omega absolute value is the Fourier transform of. Once again, why does it make sense to have omega absolute value in reconstruction? What was the argument? How did we find that out, that omega absolute value has to be used? There were two arguments. One is the geometric argument, where we said we sampled the Fourier transform in the parallel projection scenario in polar coordinates. That means we have more samples in the center, less samples outside. So we have to weight the samples properly, that the inner ones have a lower impact on the result than the outer ones. And the formal argument is we have to do a coordinate transform, and the Jacobian is the absolute value of omega. Okay? Which one do I prefer more? I personally prefer more the geometric interpretation. Why? Because that's what I have in mind, illustrations, imagination, and if I have to do the math, somehow I will fight through it. Yeah? Somehow I will fight through it. Good. Wasn't that a nice figure? Yeah. Again, this is in the scenario. And now, Benedict, I ask you again, which detector is it here that we draw in?
This one is the parallel.
Right. And the projection rays are from which projection geometry? From the fan beam, yeah? And so we mix up the two scenarios to do the conversion. And you can write here, professor screwed it up within the lecture on December 1st. Good. And, sir, this is the last one, the previous one?
Or the next one?
The next one? This here?
Yes.
Okay. Benedict.
That's the convolution.
That's the convolution. Why two stars? Stefan. Because it's two dimensional. It's just a 2D convolution. Yeah. So this here is a 2D function. So we have to do a 2D convolution with 1 over r. And 1 over r is the distance, so x squared plus y squared. Okay? Yeah? I would never use two stars, but that's the notation that this author used in this book. That's a Chinese version. You know, maybe Chinese need also an indicator with respect to the operator that it's 2D. Or how is it in China?
Yes.
No. Yes. Okay. You say stop if it's too much, right? I'm just having fun here. It's just telling us this is a 2D convolution. That's just the generalization from the 1T to the 2D. But good that you ask. I mean, and do you remember what the comma here is? That's the Chinese plus, right? That's a typo as well. Good. The Franconian plus. Good. And just for your information, because you will see it in the literature, and I'm sure you are now starting to read books and books and books on reconstruction, this process here is called rebinning. Yeah, that means we have bins where we have our measurements, and we convert the gamma beta bins into S theta bins. Yeah? Rebinning. Rebinning means we convert the fan beam geometry to parallel beam geometry. And if you implement this, there is this huge disadvantage, because in filtered back projection, what you can do is the following. You can put the patient under the scanner. You can press the foot switch. The system starts to rotate and acquire image. We put power on the X-ray tube. We get one projection. Right away, you ignore whatever is going to happen and whatever happened before. You can use the measurement, convolve it with a high-pass filter like the Shep-Logan or Ramlak filter, and then you can smear it back and do back projection. If you have fan beam geometry and you are required to do rebinning, you need multiple betas, so more images than one, to find the right projection rays to build up a virtual parallel projection. That means if you have fan beam geometry and you implement the reconstruction using the rebinning, you have to acquire multiple images before you can start to do reconstruction. Yeah? That means if you use parallel projection, you can reconstruct on the fly. The projections come in, you do the back projection, and you throw away the projection images. If you have fan beam geometry, you have to store the projections, and then you have to use them to find the proper projection rays to build up your virtual parallel projections. That's a big issue, yeah, from a practical point of view in terms of implementation. Parallel beam, take the projection, do the filtering, back projection, throw it away, take the next one. Here you have to store things and to do all the transformation. So that's a pain. That's not as nice. Okay, a disadvantage, and that's also why this is not the way we want to go for in the final implementation. And please do not learn these formulas. Yeah, do not learn these formulas. You can derive it or you can't, depending on your personal mood at that thing. But you can derive these things you should not learn. So to summarize, parallel beam to fan beam conversion and vice versa, you can do it. It's a feasible solution using this rebinning approach. The change of coordinate systems requires interpolation. Interpolation means that your samples in one grid are not mapped to samples in the other grid, but somewhere in between, and you have to find a way to get the discrete values at those points where you want to have it. And if you do interpolation, you do some blurring, meaning you do some low pass. Yeah, you lose high frequencies. Rebinning has also the disadvantage that you cannot do reconstruction projection-wise, that's what I explained to you in the previous minutes. And rebinning is for these reasons, not the method of first choice. Yeah? It's not the preferred choice. So what we have to do is now we have to derive a reconstruction method for fan beam projection geometry by conversion of the reconstruction algorithm. That means we are not manipulating the projection images and transform it into the known scenario and do the reconstruction. But what we now do is exactly what we did within the filtered back projection derivation. We look into the reconstruction algorithm, and then we do the coordinate transform in these double integrals and go through it. Yeah. And I can tell you, it's fun to do these, to do this, and you are easily lost with all the coordinate transforms and things like that. What we now have to do is we have to incorporate the coordinate transform. We have to remember if we do an integral coordinate transform, we have to extend, we have to compute the Jacobian of the transformation and incorporate that. And by doing this, we will find or we will end up with a nice algorithm that works projection-wise like the filtered back projection approach. So we get a projection, we have to do filtering with a very special filter, and then we do the smearing back, and then we take the next one, and so on. Okay, that's what we have to do in the following. So let's first summarize how the algorithm works that we have seen as an alternative to the smearing back and filtering approach. Given a parallel beam algorithm, why is it so cool if you can use parallel beam algorithms? I mean, this is a computationally intense procedure. What is the complexity roughly, Max? Of, yeah. Cubic. It's cubic complexity. Yeah, you have to cubic times the number of projections. So cubic complexity. It's the number of the voxels you want to reconstruct. So X, Y, and Z pixels, and then the number of projections. And so we have cubic complexity times the number of projections you have. And that complexity tells us if you want to be fast, you have to use special hardware. And 5 years ago, we still had the situation that all the CT scanners, they had very special hardware with a hardware implementation of the reconstruction algorithm. So you had a reconstruction machine. And if you change something in the geometry, you don't want to rebuild the hardware, but you want to reuse the hardware. And so it was highly appreciated at the beginning that you can use the parallel beam reconstruction machine. You do the rebinning, and then you do the fan beam reconstruction by the rebin structure. And here, what we are now going to do is we look at the reconstruction algorithm. How does that work? We look at P as theta, yeah, and convolve it. And then after the convolution, we do the back projection. Here is the rebinning structure. That's the theta is gamma plus beta approach. We can also compute the Jacobian of the transform. Let me just write this down. The Jacobian, if the transform is theta is alpha plus beta, and d is s is d times sine gamma. What is the Jacobian with respect to beta and gamma? It's just to make it complicated. Well, Jacobian means take the derivative with respect to the first unknown, and the second column is the derivative with respect to the second. So it's the determinant of, well, the derivative with respect to gamma is 1. The derivative of this with respect to gamma is, yeah. The derivative with respect to beta, and the derivative with respect to beta, and the absolute value of this is, well, 1 times 0 minus d times cosine gamma, if we consider the absolute value. That means we have somehow to, in the final algorithm, we have to multiply things with d times cosine gamma. And this is also called cosine weighting in fan beam reconstruction. So at the end of the day, we have to do a cosine weighting in the integral. And in the first generations of the C-arm reconstruction machines, I was not so much familiar with the reconstruction algorithms. We sold the first versions without cosine weighting. But don't tell my ex-boss. Well, it's recorded, but he's not going to watch the videos. But yeah. Just to tell you what happens, you know, as an engineer, I mean, the images looked okay, so we were very happy. At some point, theory is also important. And we had a huge boost in image quality by incorporating the cosine weighting. That was a huge success, and it was just, you know, one line of code that I adapted within half a year. And that was a celebrated boost in the system. I got a huge increase in salary, and it was nice, just by a cosine factor. So we do this, and then we do the coordinate transform within the reconstruction integrals, and we end up with a fan beam algorithm, and that's something we have to do right now. And for the detector geometry, there are two detectors that we can consider. One is the flat detector that is used in C-arm systems, and the other one is a curved detector. In one situation with a flat detector, we have an equidistant sampling, and with the curved detector, we have an equiangular sampling. And it's also interesting as an engineer, mathematician, to look at the problems you have to deal with if you have these two different sampling strategies. It from a theoretical point of view, if you have an infinite number of projections, that doesn't matter. But if you have discrete values, it makes a difference. And it's interesting how things behave in terms of reconstruction artifacts, noise behavior, and things like that. Yeah? So sampling is different in both geometries. So we will have different reconstruction formulas. At the end, we will have different reconstruction formulas depending on whether we sample equidistantly or angularly? Yishin, equiangular sampling, I think is the proper word. You know what I mean. Okay. The language of the engineer is broken English. Yeah. Our language is broken English. So, and now I will do this on the blackboard, and I can tell you this will be a tough story now. Let's see how we will end up in the...
I didn't understand why equidistant is.
My what?
Equidistant.
Why this is happening?
Yeah, why it is.
Okay. Did you watch soccer in summer? Okay. Okay, so, and Manuel Neuer is sick. He's not there, okay? And there you have a soccer player. Okay? And there you have a soccer player. Yeah. So let's say this is the soccer player A from Argentina, and this is the soccer player D from Deutschland. Yeah? Okay. Now let's forget about the German guy. And Argentina is right in front of the door, of the goal. This guy shoots, and guess what happens? Huh? He is here. Okay, so Jerome is sleeping. So this guy is shooting, but we are not nervous, right? Because this guy is shooting here, okay? Then the German guy comes back. And sides have changed, so this is the right goal. And he shoots and brings in an X-ray particle into this bucket here. Okay, good. Then Argentinians are very creative people. So they say, if we don't hit the one, we build up many of them. Okay, and they have all the same size. Yeah, and then we say, okay, we weight the goals by the distance or whatever, yeah, from the center. But this guy shoots. And it goes into this bucket. So if I generate here X-ray particles, I can have equidistant goals or buckets in a row, and I can shoot according to the fan beam geometry. I have it equidistant, okay? Now I can also have the goals with the same size on a circle, then I get equiangular samples. That means that the buckets that I put there, they capture balls from different angles, depending on whether they are on a row or whether they are on an angle. But I do measure where the balls come from and how many balls come from which direction, but in a different way. One is equiangular and one is equidistant.
So the equiangular one is equidistant and angular because the bucket is still the same.
Yeah, the bucket is here, yeah, and here and here. Yeah, the segments are the same, but they sit on a circle. Yes, please, your name?
Flo.
Flo, okay. No.
No. And you don't require this?
Why? No.
The distribution is different, maybe.
Well, it depends also on the design of the X-ray tube. What you can do is you can capture an image where nothing is in between the tube and the detector, and then you can see the distribution of the X-ray particles. Usually you have the so-called Hill effect, that the image gets brighter to one side linearly, but actually it doesn't matter. Yeah, we measure the number of or the energy of the incoming X-ray particles, and we transform it into an intensity value, a function value. Was this a nice example? It was just out of the blue? Okay. Was not offending, I hope. Now you're asking, where was Manuel Neuer? Yeah. Well, I don't know. Good. Maybe. Ah, Heisenberg. Did China attend the World Championship, by the way? I don't remember. No? Oui. So who can tell me the reconstruction formula? The reconstruction formula. If I want to reconstruct the function f x and y using, that's the Franconian way.
Parallel.
It's the B and the prelabialis L. Parallel. You know what the real bad thing is? You will remember this 10 years from now. You will say, remember this professor, he was doing these things weird. Good. Reconstruction. What do you remember? The first thing is, if you attend a lecture of me, then you know I don't care about factors, prefactors, constants. Yeah, so there might be some constant somewhere. So, okay, constant. And then back projection in the 1D case means convolution and back projection. Convolution is an integral, back projection is an integral. So we will have two integrals. Yeah, we will convolve over S, and we will do a back projection of over. We will do a back projection over all the angles. That means we will integrate from 0 to 2 pi, or from 0 to pi, and adjust the constant C properly. Why doesn't it matter if I do parallel project? Why doesn't it matter if I use parallel projection, whether I integrate over 0 to pi or 0 to pi? Dominic?
Because after 180 degrees, we get the same data.
Right. It doesn't matter whether the X-ray tube is here and the detector element is here, or here the X-ray tube and here the detector. The X-ray particles, they usually don't care which way they go. In practice, you might say it is a difference, and I have to say yes. Because depending on the material, you have different types of scattering. Yeah, and so scattering means, imagine Boateng was there, and the Argentinian guy is shooting and hits Boateng, and the ball goes into a different direction. That's scattering. Yeah, and dependent who sits around, you can do scattering. So by accident, you hit someone, and then the ball is deviated. You hit someone, and the X-ray particle is deviated. Yeah. And if you look at the defense of the Chinese national team, I mean, they sit all in the, like a barrier in front of the goal. And I mean, they just sit there and hope that they get shot and it's deviated, scattered, right? Maybe, I'm not sure. Is that true? It's true? Really? Okay. Good. So we have to convolve. What do we have to convolve? Our signal that we measure. How did we call our signal that we measure? B, yeah? B. B of S and theta. And we have to convolve it with a kernel. And how does the kernel look like? Yeah, but that would be considered using the line integral and so on. But at the end, we found out that we have to take the inverse of the absolute value function, yeah, the inverse Fourier transform of that, and to convolve this with this resulting kernel in the spatial domain. And we call this here. Oh. it's. From an ergonomic point of view, it's way better. I have too much energy. So you have your kernel, we call this H, yeah, filter. And then we have the point x cosine theta plus y sine theta minus s. So that's the straight line the values have to sit on. And then we integrate over s. And we integrate over the rotation angle d theta. Okay? That's the reconstruction algorithm that we ended up with. And please remember the coordinate transform. That we have considered. If I have a point here, x and y, in the xy plane, I have here my angle phi, and I have here my distance r, and I can now replace x by r times cosine phi and y by r sine phi. I'll explain in a few seconds or on Monday why we do this transform. Okay? And then we also use trigonometry. And this is a formula that I also don't know by heart. I know this formula if I teach that, but after 2 weeks, again, I have to look it up. But it's an interesting formula. So if we have x, cosine theta plus y sine theta, and we express now x in r cosine phi and y in r sine phi and plug it in. So we plug this in here and we plug this in here and massage the formula, so we get mixed terms of sine and cosine functions in different angles. Then we can look up the, and I only know the German name, Additionstheoreme, because I learned it at school but never at the university in an English context, addition theorems. If we use the rules of trigonometric functions, Ludwig remembers that, of course. What is it? What do we get? R times
cosine.
And the argument is trivial, right? Okay. So what we do now is, once again, we have here our x and y coordinate of the function that we want to reconstruct, and we say we rewrite this in terms of polar coordinates. Now you say, why do we do that? I tell you, don't care about it, we just do it and look what's going to happen. Yeah? Okay? So this is the term we have to remember, and now we go into the above formula using that. And I'll just write this down and then we should stop the lecture, because otherwise I do 2 pages and I have to do it again on Monday. And that's not very economic. And you know, I get my salary anyway, so I can stop also. So we get f in polar coordinates. So the function now we reconstruct in polar coordinates. Again, we have a constant. This is 1/2, but I just write c. And then we have the double integral for the back projection, for the convolution. Then we have the projection, rotation angle index on the detector line. And then we have h of x cosine, y sine, x cosine, y sine in terms of the polar coordinates is hello. Is Stefan? If you think you can relax after Monday. So what is it, sir?
R times cosine of theta minus s. Minus s.
And then we have the two integrals ds, d theta. Why no Jacobian? Max?
No Jacobian.
My guess it's because if we transform into polar coordinates, we have to get a factor in it, and it's
why didn't I now write a Jacobian? Huh? No, it could be a one, but it doesn't matter. We don't need the Jacobian in this case, because what we transform is x and y, and this is not participating in the integration. Yeah, if I have to integrate over x and I call it alpha or 5 alpha or 7 alpha. If I have a function in x but not integrating over x, I can replace the x by whatever I want. Yeah. I'm not changing the variables that I integrate over. That's why I have no Jacobian. Good. And what we now have to do is, and I don't do it now, I do it on Monday in more detail, we replace theta by our nice formula that did cost us a lot of pain. And we will replace s by d times sine gamma. And this is a coordinate transform that affects the integral, so we will also be required to use the Jacobian. And with the Jacobian we have already computed, that was the d times cosine gamma. You remember that? And then we apply this and massage the formula and look, let's see what's going to happen. We successively replace now the function ps theta by the g gamma beta and do all the coordinate transforms within the integral. That's a very ugly procedure, mechanical procedure. It's not hard in terms of mathematics, but hard to do it on the blackboard because you easily lose control over the whole scenario. But at the end, we will come up with a very compact and nice algorithm. And guess what's going to happen? We will at the end find out that the fan beam reconstruction is nothing else but capture the image, convolve the image with a filter that is different from Shep-Logan. It's a different one. That basically incorporates the coordinate transform we have to do, and then do a back projection. So it's from a certain distance, yeah, the algorithm is exactly the same like for parallel geometry. And that's extremely cool, and I'm pretty much convinced you are very excited, very nervous during the weekend because you can't wait until Monday to see the results. And I'm very excited to explain it to you on Monday, and have a nice weekend. And enjoy the time before Christmas. Happy shopping and everything. So enjoy.